The scripture is from Luke 18, verse 31 until 19, verse 10. Then Jesus took the 12 aside and said to them, "Look, we are going up to Jerusalem, and everything that is written about the Son of Man by the prophets will be accomplished. For he will be handed over to the Gentiles, and he will be mocked and insulted and spat upon. After they have flogged him, they will kill him, and on the third day he will rise again." But the disciples understood nothing about all these things. In fact, what he said was hidden from them, and they did not grasp what was said.
And as Jesus approached Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard the crowd going by, he asked what was happening. And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth is passing by." Then he shouted, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Those who were in front sternly ordered him to be quiet. And he shouted even louder, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stood still and ordered the man be brought to him. And when he came near, Jesus asked him, "What do you want of me? What do you want me to do for you?" He said, "Lord, let me see again." Jesus said to him, "Receive your sight. Your faith has saved you." Immediately he regained his sight and followed him, glorifying God. And all the people, when they saw it, praised God.
Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through it. A man was there named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. He was trying to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was short in stature. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree to see him, because he was going to pass that way. When Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to Zacchaeus, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." So he hurried down and was happy to welcome him. All who saw it began to grumble and said, "He has gone to be the guest of one who is a sinner." Zacchaeus stood there and said to the Lord, "Look, half of my possessions, Lord, I will give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will pay back four times as much." Then Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because he too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek out and to save the lost." Let's sing our hymn of preparation. "Will you come and follow me if I but call your name?"
Number 540 in your head.
Thank you.
We'll give it a go. Yes. So Christ confronts our blinders. Twyla pointed out that blinders are not found in the Bible. So this is a modern day take. How do you see things? Seeing. This could be physical, rods, cones, optic nerve. Could be emotional or intellectual or understanding. Do you see a vision? Do you see a dream? Do you look back and see a fulfillment of prophecy? Do it that way. Is that better? Testing 1, 2, 7. It could be a spiritual seeing as well. Do you see your personal relationship with Jesus? Do you see your inner state of faith? Each of these are ways of seeing, and they all have limitations or blinders. Got to have a sports analogy in here somehow. I often watch the game without the sound on, because the commentators and the play-by-play guys sometimes aren't that smart. I like my opinion. I'll listen to the coach or the GM or scout sometimes, the players and the parents. They've got their views. And the ref and the ref supervisor, they also have their view of the game. Which of these views are wearing blinders? Not to mention the sponsors. So there's a few chuckles. I couldn't resist. That's Peaky Blinders on a horse with no blinders. It's a Netflix show. It's all good. Some more blinders. Falcons. Have you all seen hunting with falcons? And they keep the hood on top so the bird stays calm. And then when the hood comes off or the blinder comes off, it's hunting time. Maybe it's time to go to sleep. Maybe it's too bright, too many rays beaming at you, glares blocking your vision. These are some shooters' blinders. Some are opaque that you can get a bit of light through, but still it helps you focus on one thing. And there's the very cool racetrack blinders that some horses have. And then, of course, our classic buggy horse blinders like you have on the front of your bulletin. Now, horses are flight animals, and I didn't really think of that, even though I grew up in Waterloo County. When I bought a donkey back in the day, and my uncle came over, Uncle Noah, the donkey came over to see what was going on, and my uncle goes, and the donkey goes, if that was a horse, it would have turned and ran. Horses are flight animals. When something surprises them, their first response is not to yell, not to shut down, not to text somebody, but to run. So horses wear blinders when they're driving so that if something jumps out in the ditch, they don't go, whoa, and run away from it, which takes them right into traffic and bad things happen from there. What do you think of when you think of blinders? And which of your blinders is Christ confronting or needs to be confronted? And are blinders always a bad thing? Back to 1987, some of you were around by then, John Cleese of Monty Python fame.
Seriously, though. We've heard a lot about extremism recently, a nastier, harsher atmosphere everywhere, more abuse and bother boy behavior, less friendliness and tolerance and respect for opponents. All right, but what we never hear about extremism is its advantages. Well, the biggest advantage of extremism is that it makes you feel good because it provides you with enemies. Let me explain. The great thing about having enemies is that you can pretend that all the badness in the whole world is in your enemies and all the goodness in the whole world is in you. Attractive, isn't it? So, if you have a lot of anger and resentment in you anyway, and you therefore enjoy abusing people, then you can pretend that you're only doing it because these enemies of yours are such very bad persons. And that if it wasn't for them, you'd actually be good-natured and courteous and rational all the time. So, if you want to feel good, become an extremist. Okay, now you have a choice. If you join the hard left, they'll give you their list of authorized enemies. Almost all kinds of authority, especially the police, the city, Americans, judges, multinational corporations, public schools, furriers, newspaper owners, fox hunters, generals, class traitors, and, of course, moderates. Or, if you'd rather be an extremist on the hard right, no problem, fine, you still get a lovely list of enemies, only they're different ones. Noisy minority groups, unions, Russia, weirdos, demonstrators, welfare sponges, meddlesome clergy, peaceniks, the BBC, strikers, social workers, communists, and, of course, moderates. And upstart actors. Now, once you're armed with one of these super lists of enemies, you can be as nasty as you like and yet feel your behaviors morally justified. So you can strut around abusing people and telling them you could eat them for breakfast and still think of yourself as a champion of the truth, a fighter for the greater good, and not the rather sad paranoid schizoid that you really are.
1987 is how many years ago? At least we haven't seen any extremism in our media recently by anyone, and we're not seeing any in any elections. Maybe this is one of our blinders that we need to confront and understand that. Yes, while extremism does make us feel good, it maybe is one of the blinders that we need to remove. Let's dig back into the scripture. So when they asked me to preach, So I did go to Bible school, so we do tick away at some of these biblical studies. Zach was nice enough to lend me only three of his commentaries on the book of Luke. One of which was just on the second half of Luke. The first part of the passage that was read is the third pronouncement. And it starts off with C. I think that's where the leader group was going to try and figure out what we can do with these blinders. So when he took them aside and he said to them, C, we're going up to Jerusalem, and everything that's written about the Son of Man by the prophets will be accomplished. He'll be handed over to the Gentiles. I'll get back to that in a second. He'll be mocked and insulted and spat upon. And after they flogged him, they'll kill him. On the third day, he rises. But they understood nothing about all these things. In fact, what he said was hidden, and they did not grasp what he said. But we got the advantage. We're coming in after this story. Left me with a few questions like, it's the third pronouncement, so where are the other two? The seeing thing, which I tried to highlight for you a couple times, seeing and understanding and grasping were all things about seeing. In Matthew and Mark, Jesus handed Jesus over to the chief priests and scribes. Luke is a little nicer. He gets handed over to the Gentiles. This missing everything and not grasping, it reminded me of, remember in the Exodus, Pharaoh's heart was hardened. So there's that whole theme of not understanding or having your heart hardened. Here's the first pronouncement. This one comes right after the feeding of the 5,000. Once when Jesus was praying alone with only the disciples near him, he asked, "What are they saying on social media?" And they said, in Twitter and Facebook, sorry, Meta and X, they said John the Baptist. But YouTube says Elijah. And Reddit actually says it's the ancient prophets or somebody else. But then Jesus turned to them and said, and this one comes straight from the scriptures and comes right to our hearts, who do you say that I am? And it's a question each of us needs to answer on our own. Who do you say that I am? And Peter said, you are the Messiah of God. And then Jesus said, don't tell anyone. And then goes on to explain the suffering and death and resurrection. Second pronouncement, only 20 verses later, comes after casting out a demon. While everyone was amazed at what he was doing, he said to his disciples, let these words sink into your ears. The Son of Man is going to be betrayed in human hands, but they didn't understand. Its meaning was concealed, they could not perceive, and they were afraid to ask. That's why I titled this one, it's either listening or just smile and nod. We've all been in that scenario where we have no idea, we just smile and nod and go along with things. That's how my mind works. I make a table to help me understand things. So you got the first one here, and the second one 20 verses later, and the third one like 9 chapters later. This is the one we're dealing with today. In each case, they was alone with the disciples. What happened before, miracle, and the rich ruler. So someone had an encounter with Jesus. What sense? You got voice, ears, and sight. The response, shh, don't tell anybody, and tell them what? The takeaway, first one, who do you say that I am? Piercing question. Second one was they were too scared to ask. And then on this one here, this happens just before they get to Jerusalem. Well, what's up with that? If you take a brief look at the table of contents so you know where you are. Okay. We've all read the birth story, a couple of chapters on that. Preparing for ministry, then he ministers in Galilee. And each of those are short, right? They're only a couple chapters. And then we go from 9 to 19, this whole ministry on the journey to Jerusalem. And we're here right at the very end of that. And very shortly, we get to the Passion and the Resurrection. And here's the story about the blind man. And again, I've got some of these words having to do with sight and seeing highlighted. As he approached Jericho, blind man was sitting on the roadside begging. He heard the crowd, and he said, who is it? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. And then he does something interesting. From Jesus of Nazareth, he goes, Jesus, son of David. Changes it entirely. Son of David was the term for the Messiah. Not just some dude from Bloomingdale. This is the Christ. Have mercy on me. And then the crowd was very nice to him, and they said, shut up. Which meant he just yelled louder. Brings back, conjures up images of the widow and the unjust judge. She just kept coming until she got what was right. So Jesus stands still and orders the people to bring him to him. And he says, what do you want me to do for you? Not just who do you say that I am, but what do you want me to do for you? It's a question we can all ponder. What would you say if Jesus stood in front of you and said, what do you want from me? And he was very clear. I want to see. And Jesus said, you got it. Your faith has saved you. How many times in the Gospels have we seen that phrase? Your faith has made you well. That's come up in a lot of the different stories. And then again, this gospel theme of immediateness. Immediately gained his sight and followed him. And then what? All the people who were doing what before? Sternly ordering them to be quiet, they're praising God as well. Who had their sight restored? is that special one. Sorry, we made a bunch of substitutions. Initially, I was song leader, and Laura was on tech, and Lois was going to preach. No, just kidding. Sometimes a helpful way of finding meaning in a text is to compare. And in the Gospels, we've got Matthew, Mark, and Luke that often parallel each other, and it gives us some insight. John kind of went off and did his own thing for the most part. But here, this is the first column is the Luke passage. As he approached Jericho, and in Matthew, apparently he was leaving Jericho. And in Mark, when they came to Jericho, blah, 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 and we're leaving the city. So you got coming, going, coming, and going. At least we got Jericho. So Jericho is the main thing here. Okay. There's a blind man sitting at the roadside begging. In Matthew, there's two blind men, but they were still sitting by the roadside. Doesn't say anything about begging. And here, a blind man, ooh, dude's got a name and a father, was sitting by the roadside begging. So we got blind and we got begging, and then the details vary. And he heard a crowd, and when they heard that Jesus was going by, and you heard the crowd, and it's Jesus of Nazareth. And then, if you want to slide that or scroll that up a smidgen, beauty. Then he starts hollering, Jesus, Son of David, Lord, Son of David, Jesus, Son of David. Okay, we got agreement there. Everybody told him to be quiet and not too high because they're not parallel. Bring her back down a smidgen. Okay. Jesus stopped and ordered him to come. Jesus stopped and called them. And Jesus stopped. So you can kind of picture it. There's chaos everywhere. And what does Jesus do? He stops, he goes against the grain and tries to center or focus things. So again, trying to remove the blinder of chaos, you might say. What do you want me to do for you? What do you want me to do for you? Oh, these guys, they get a little pump up here. Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you. And he throws his cloak and he jumps to his feet and comes to Jesus. But again, there's complete agreement. What do you want me to do for you? I want to see. We want our sight. Lord, I want to see. Receive your sight. Your faith has healed you. This one's a little, he had to touch their eyes. It's four eyes. It's going to take a little longer. And go, your faith has healed you. And immediately he received his sight. Is that it? I think that's it. Sometimes you get the gist of the story, and sometimes there's details that some include and others that don't. Who received their sight? Is it just the blind man? Or in this one, when all the people saw it, they also praised God. So it's not just the blind man that received sight, it was the crowd. Sometimes we're the blind ones, sometimes we're part of the crowd. And back to my clicker, please. This story is only in Luke. It's not found anywhere else. And you got to admit, those of you who are older and have read this umpteen times, you hear the story of Zacchaeus, what do you think? You think of some short dude that's very evil, that climbs trees like a logger at an Echo versus Steel logging competition, right? And then he gets called down and he drops like a rock and he's there and he gets converted. Because back in the day, we were all about conversion and that was the important part. After coming to this, sitting with it for quite some time, reading various translations, I saw it a way that I hadn't seen it before. We'll get there. Remember, he's entering Jericho. Jericho is very close to Jerusalem. We're almost at the end of that Journey to Jerusalem ministry part, and then it gets highly tense. There's a man, Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and stinking rich. And he sought to see Jesus. This is an interesting thing. Do we seek to see Jesus? What does that look like? You look him up on Google? You get Siri to find him for you? Where do we look to see Jesus? In this case, he couldn't see him because apparently he was short. So he ran ahead and climbed into a sycamore tree so that he could see him. And here's where, if I wanted to watch people without having them notice me, I would do it from above because most people don't have those rock climbing glasses. Hunting humans from a tree stand would be the way to go because people don't look up. They're usually on their phone or they're looking at their feet, avoiding eye contact. It's human characteristic to look down, not up.
At their phone.
Exactly. And when Jesus came to that place, he looked up. Did he keep walking or he probably stopped? I'm guessing most people, when they look up, they don't keep walking because the den's poorly. Looked up and talks right to him. Zacchaeus, make haste. I don't know if I'd tell somebody to make haste and come down. too many lawsuits. I got to stay at your house today. So he made haste and came down, just like you've seen those loggers drop off those poles. It's amazing how fast they can come down, and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they, meaning who? The big crowd. They all murmured. They all started posting on social media. He's gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner. Then what? Zacchaeus stands up, or maybe he got a ping and his social media went off, bad guy alert. But he stands up and he addresses who? The crowd? Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor. And here's where I got hung up. I give. That's the present tense. I know I'm just a phys ed teacher, but that's present tense. That's I already do this. And the hidden question there is, why do they hate on me so much? Why are they posting all this garbage about me? Because I'm already doing these things. I give half to the poor. And if I've defrauded anybody, I make it right. And Jesus said, today, that immediate theme again, salvation has come to this house. We realize that these things are saving and that he is also a son of Abraham. Son of Abraham has to do with being Jewish, part of the faith. Okay. For the Son of Man. For this one, I did a quick compare contrast between that story about the rich ruler and Zacchaeus. They're both rich. One, however, walked through the crowd right up to Jesus. Nobody got in his way, right? There was no crowd, like the blind guy couldn't get to the crowd because he couldn't get to Jesus. He didn't see him. Zacchaeus couldn't get there because they squeezed him out and they had no respect for him. This guy walks right up to Jesus. Zacchaeus couldn't do that. Ruler was politically correct. Zacchaeus politically a traitor because he's working for the other guys. it'd be like supporting the Americans in their extortion of our, I mean. The ruler was of high social standing and Zacchaeus low social standing. Ruler followed the letter of the law, while Zacchaeus was following the spirit of the law. So, who had the blinders on in that story? As a kid, I would have said it's Zacchaeus because he got converted. He was being bad and now he's good. When you read that with, I already give to the poor, you got to read it as it's the crowd that's blind. They're just judging by the exterior and they don't actually see what this guy is, that he actually understands what the gospel is all about. And then lastly, for the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. And then I've been quoting scripture, but Jesus just did. It's actually straight from Ezekiel 34. There's a big chapter on God is the good shepherd. And a good shepherd leads their sheep. And in this case, they seek the lost, bring back the strayed, bind up the crippled, strengthen the weak. And the fat and the strong, I will watch over. And there's a, when you're reading the Bible, the little notes are, I always find them fascinating. B, down here, the Hebrew word is destroy. The fat and the strong, I will destroy. That's us. That doesn't sound very good. But watch over and destroy seem like different things, and the watch over is actually found in the Greek and the Latin translations. So back to the sports game. I prefer to think of it this way, the watch over, because a good shepherd watches over all their sheep, right? Even the privileged ones. But the privileged ones don't need seeking because they're not lost, and they didn't stray, so they don't need to be brought back, and they're not crippled, they don't need binding, and they don't need strengthening. What they need is a dose of justice. So everybody gets what they need. And that sounds pretty good to me. Which means we all get challenged where we're at. All right, I'm almost done. Three more minutes. There's three proclamations. There's three accounts of the blind beggar. We did three different scripture stories. And in all three stories, the focus is on one, but it's the many that gain the understanding. All right, back to the blinders. If we lift off all our blinders and we just look everywhere, what do we see? Well, we don't see world peace. We got wars all over the place. Those places, plus 16 other countries with more than 1,000 state conflict casualties, which is the definition of war. We got hunger everywhere. There's AIDS rampant all around. We got poverty. There's disasters everywhere. If you haven't looked, there's earthquakes and mudslides. We got climate issues. We have massive issues with drugs. People disagree on vaccines. We can't figure out quite how to welcome the LGBTQ plus group. We got this whole truth and reconciliation thing. There's only like 100 and some things to figure out with that. And we got a trade war. And then of course, we all have our own extremism, which makes us feel good, right? If we tackle all of that, we're going to suffer these things, 100%. And in the information age where we have access to everything, what are the most common ailments? It's these things. How many of us are stressed, overwhelmed? So, when I said you want to preach on confronting Christ confronts our blinders, I said, yeah, but you're not going to like what I have to say because I'm going to say put blinders on. That's the safer thing to do. Or another way to say it is stay in your lane. It's good to be aware of all those issues. You have to be aware. But if you try and tackle them, you're going to you're going to be overwhelmed. When I was doing my bus driver training, you know, the rules of the road say stay in the left lane. But if you're in a bus and you make a left turn, now you're in the, sorry, in the right lane. You're in the... If you make a left turn, you have to turn into the left lane and declare your lane, right? But if you're in a bus or a truck and you do that, what are the cars behind you doing by the time you've established your lane? They're already in your blind spot passing you, so now you're stuck there. You can't change lanes. And you're just making everybody angry, and the longer you stay, the anger, and it all devolves from there. So my trainer said he didn't care what lane I was in as long as I had a good reason to be in that lane. And I'm suggesting that Christ is confronting us to choose our blinders wisely and stay focused and protected like a horse that wears blinders so they don't run into traffic when something startles them. We need to choose our blinders to help us reflect on Christ at the center of all you do and let go things that we're not called to do. Christ has called each one of us to an individual calling, an individual purpose, something that you're good at. Only you are good at that, or your particular mix of talents. Wear that Christ blinder so that you're not reacting to every issue and every bit of news and every social. You don't need to react. Let those things go. It's one of the defenses against the fear, the flight, the anxiety, and the overwhelming nature of the ever-shortening attention span that we see in the world that we live in. Grab a blinder.